Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host. So glad to have you back. So glad to have me back on the show that doesn't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And my goodness, a lot has happened since the last time we were together. An awful lot. The Republic's been lost. Barry Ho. Barry Ho's been reelected. Probably the last commentator in America to commentate on this, but somehow through the perfect storm of young, ignorant dependents, old welfare dependents, illegal immigrants, voter fraud, and the Republicans' failure to nominate a conservative, Barry Ho has been reelected. Now, I told you people from the get-go that Romney's nomination was doomed. Doomed, I said. Yes, a threefold cord. It's not easily broken. And Romney had three fatal flaws. That's right. The Mormonism, the liberalism, and the fact that he's rich. All three of them combined, along with this other perfect storm here, to give Barry Ho the presidency for another 4 years. And folks, if this doesn't kill the Republican Party dead, I think it will qualify as a zombie party that cannot be killed. You know, the zombie attack everyone's been waiting for? It'll be the Republicans in 2016, should they still exist, which they should not. Every one of them, from Karl Rove on down to all of Romney's handlers, should be drummed out of their office and handed a tin cup, given dark glasses, and made to stand on street corners. That should be their career from now on. That's it. We'll see if the Republic can be wrenched from the grips of the liberal Republicans and the far-left stone Marxist Democrats over the next 4 years. But other big things have happened. The military and intelligence of the highest reaches of our government have been decapitated, some by self-inflicted wounds, other by, well, it's just frankly embarrassing. You folks remember when I told you that when it comes to sorting out what exactly happened in Benghazi, don't rule out the fact that people were getting drunk, getting high, and having sex. And that led to a lot of the problems. Well, partly come true. What else has happened? Israel has been defeated. Yes, defeated, I said, at the hands of Hamas and their Iranian sponsors. There's been a new caliphate established in Cairo headed by Mahmoud. No, is his name Mahmoud? No, his name is Mohammed. Mohammed Morsi there in Cairo. The UN is about to recognize the Philistines as their own independent state of sorts there at the United Nations. So a lot of, devastating news, frankly, has happened since I last broadcast to you. And it's almost depressing enough to make me not even want to come on the air, talk about it. But good things have been happening around the McBurney compound. Yeah, a lot of good stuff. My extremely attractive audio engineer, she's purchased me some winter duds. Yeah. She's very fashionably, she's got a lot of fashion sense. Were it not for her, I would be wearing the dark glasses with a tin cup on a street corner. So we've been having fun around here, getting into the holiday spirit. The Christmas season is upon us. Thanksgiving is behind us. We had a wonderful time thanking our Lord, our Creator God, for all the blessings He gives us, as I'm sure you did. And now it's time to get to the news. Well, I've covered all the devastating events. Where do we want to start? We'll start in Springfield, Massachusetts. This is from WWLP, which is a TV and or radio station somewhere in the greater Springfield, Mass area. They report that the Scores Gentlemen's Club, that's what they call it. Yeah. They call it a gentleman's club. Although Strip clubs aren't really frequented by gentlemen, as far as I can recall. It's been many, many, many years since I darkened the door of a strip club. The Scores strip club was destroyed in a massive gas explosion. WWLP reports that the bar was not open for business at the time of the blast. It was approximately 4:30 in the afternoon. Well, there was a gas leak reported around 4:20, and then there was the massive explosion that devastated this strip club and damaged some 40-some-odd buildings in the general vicinity. I can just see it now, some hapless businessman, a gentleman you might call him, who was going to the strip club a little early, and he had to come home, and he's covered with dust, and his hair is singed, and his wife is asking him, "Well, you were supposed to be at work. And by the way, what are those chunks of brick stuck in your face? What's that all about?" Anyway, the strip club was destroyed. We do celebrate that fact. We're not happy for the daycare center that operated next door. Didn't that strike you as odd? That there's a strip club and a daycare next door. Emblematic of the state of the nation, in my opinion. But was it the judgment of God, you ask? No, it wasn't. It was a gas company worker who was sticking a probe in the ground, searching for gas, and, well, he found some. Yeah, he pierced the main gas line, and, well, that's how that all went down. Not the judgment of God. Well, that's coming later for the operators. What's that, my dear?
If it's the judgment of God, there's a lot of other places.
Well, that's true. If it was the judgment of God, it may not have started precisely there at the Scores Gentlemen's Club. Although it would have got there eventually.
Many other places.
Many other places that the judgment of God would start. I believe it will start in the church, if I'm not mistaken. That's going on some things I read in the Bible. I think the judgment of God starts in the church. All right. But let us move on now to a newspaper from our good friends over in France, Le Parisien, which is the newspaper from Crusade, France. A man climbed onto his window ledge Sunday before last, and he was threatening to jump. But by the time he had reached the point of no return, he changed his mind, and he began calling for help as he hung from a railing. Well, a neighbor came out of the building, but the man was exhausted and fell. He fell down on top of her, right on top of her head. Yeah. Both the man and his neighbor, who's a 57-year-old woman, were taken to the hospital with minor injuries. The man escaped with a minor injury to his forehead, and he has been admitted to a psychiatric hospital. So just as the strip club next door to the daycare center was emblematic of the state of America, this story, to me, is symbolic of the state of the whole European Union, known affectionately here as the EU. Yeah, the whole European Union. I wonder if the neighbor whom the Parisian fell on was German. I wonder if she was German. Was her name Angela by chance? You have to be very economically astute to get that joke. My extremely attractive audio engineers not laughing.
I'm sorry.
Not laughing on key as supposed to do there. But again, she doesn't pay much attention to the economics of the EU. All right. Now, we're going to stay in France, oddly enough, from the justice file. This story, many here in the States haven't been following it, but it is it's the French equivalent of the Jessica Ridgway saga. 15-year-old Chloe Rodriguez had been missing in southern France. Well, she was found in Germany, tied up in the trunk of a car last Friday afternoon after police stopped her kidnapper during a routine traffic stop. She had disappeared the week before after leaving her home by scooter to go to a friend's house. Her parents told reporters that she's doing well, but that she has been crying a lot. Now, the kidnapper is a 32-year-old man from the Gard region of southern France, where Chloe lives with her family, and he remains detained in a German jail. The man had been released from jail just this past September after being convicted in May 2009 of physically and otherwise assaulting six women. Yeah. Now, the man's lawyer says that, well, he had undergone the recommended psychiatry in prison. And the girl's mother, yeah, that's what his lawyer said. Well, the man paid his debt to society. He was under the care of a psychiatrist there. In prison, he was duly released and kidnapped this girl, tied her up and put her in his trunk and did heaven knows what to this poor child. Well, the girl's mother said, "This man who did her so much harm, there is justice, and justice will be rendered, but I thank him anyways because he kept her alive." The mother thanks the kidnapper because he kept the daughter alive. I don't know. People just don't have their priorities straight.
Yeah, it's like the thanks for not driving.
Yeah, it's like the big sign on the road. We're driving home from church today, and the you know those ubiquitous signs that are everywhere on the road now? The little lighted dots, and they spell out messages. They're everywhere now. And it said, "We're thankful for sober drivers." And my extremely attractive audio engineer pointed out, "Why are you thanking people for just doing what they're supposed to do, not getting hammered behind the wheel? I mean, do we really need to be thankful for that?"
They're heroes, see?
They're heroes. That's right. They're everyday. They're everyday heroes. That's right. So if you went out and got completely obliterated, hammered over the Thanksgiving weekend, but you assigned a designated driver, you're a hero. Thank you. You know what got me about the sign is it doesn't thank anyone in particular. It just says we're thankful in general. Well, I guess it's probably, the signs are probably programmed by a government agency. And they're not allowed to thank God. In fact, they don't even know that there is a God. They don't even know that there's an impending judgment toward which they are hurtling through history, completely unawares. And they're going to be caught unawares on Judgment Day. They're going to fall into the hands of the living God. And he's not going to call them heroes. I don't think so. All right, but you know what? We're really glad that Chloe Rodriguez, 15-year-old, there in France, we're glad that she's alive. We don't thank the kidnapper, though. In fact, we want to kill him with our bare hands. Okay. So let's set that aside. Now, so that was a young girl there in France. Let's go to the domestic tranquility file. This is from CBS in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Wilkinsburg, actually. Lois Clark, 61 years old, is the music teacher at Kellyanne Elementary School. She says she parked her van less than a block away from the school where she allegedly teaches. Clark said she thought something was suspicious. She says a suspect approached her, pushed her, attempted to use a taser on her, and demanded the keys to her van. She thought something was suspicious when she saw a man standing on the street so early. You see, there in Wilkinsburg, you don't see men on the street very early. Because apparently at least 47% of them are on welfare, and they're generally in bed early in the morning. Anyway, here's what the teacher says. She says, quote, "My common sense told me keep driving, and I didn't listen. What I learned is I've got to be more observant, and I've got to listen to that still small voice." The still small voice. Now, you'll remember that from Scripture. The Scripture tells us that the still small voice is the voice of God calling us towards salvation. But in modern America, the still small voice has become your own conscience telling you, look out, there's a creep over there. Anyway, it's just sad what the still small voice has been relegated to in modern American culture. She's just trying to survive the day, right, and not get tased and knifed and have her van stolen. Well, there you go. Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, and the still small voice. A little bit more public education news, ladies and gentlemen. This is from Minnetonka. What state is Minnetonka in? I don't know. Let's guess it's somewhere in the Midwest, way, way up north, like Minnesota. I don't have it here. Where's Lake Minnetonka? I think it's Minnesota, but it could be Detroit. It could be Wisconsin. Illinois, I don't think so. Anyway, this is from a town called Minnetonka. let's see, it's from the Star Tribune. Sparking the latest debate over what's appropriate attire in Minnetonka schools, Minnetonka principal David Adney sent out an email to high school parents last Monday asking them to talk to their daughters about wearing spandex-like yoga pants or other tight-fitting leggings with T-shirts that expose what he called, quote, more leg and backside and can be highly distracting for other students. The email sparked a discussion in households all across whatever Midwestern state this is in. This could be your hometown, though, for crying out loud. I mean, we all know it, right? One mother, after she saw the email, sat down with her 14-year-old daughter to talk about, how to appropriately wear yoga pants to school. That's the current debate amongst parents with their teenage daughters in the government schools, how to appropriately wear spandex to school. The mother said, quote, she said, I told my daughter, see, I'm not the only one who feels this way. It's gotten way out of control the way kids dress. I mean, reading, writing, arithmetic, that's all has its place. But it's how do you appropriately wear spandex that dominates the conversations amongst public school children and their inept, hapless, moronic parents. Let's see. I've got some more from the principal here. The principal said, I believe this is from the email, quote, this new trend doesn't seem right. It's very troubling. And here's the big quote. Cover your butts up. I'm just going to say it straight up. We're seeing too much. That's according to the principal there at the government school. Another mom whose son attends the high school was glad to see the principal address this problem before the fashion trend trickles down to younger students. How old was this girl? This girl was only 14. What do you mean younger students, for crying out loud? Anyway, I have a question. If the student asked the principal, upon what moral authority do you presume to tell us not to dress like prostitutes? What's the principal supposed to say? I'm sure he'd have a rather dumbfounded look on his face as he pondered and searched through his memory banks and tried to find some moral authority upon which he actually stands. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So glad that you're along with us. Turn those guitars down. She wants to leave it up. Yeah, I whipped out my guitar for the first time in, I don't know, months, started playing the guitar. Found an old guitar in the basement. Took it down to the guitar shop because it was missing some parts. It was a little beat up. Yeah, because my 11-year-old daughter has expressed some interest in playing guitar. A fact that has made my extremely attractive audio engineer a little bit nervous, frankly. Not sure she wants the daughter, young Nicole, playing the guitar because she doesn't want her hanging around with musician types. Kind of hard to argue with that logic, to be honest with you. Anyway, I whipped out my guitar and been playing a little bit, and my 11-year-old, she was picking away at that guitar last night until 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. I kept coming down and saying, hey, are your fingers bleeding yet? No, Daddy. Okay, keep playing. When they start bleeding, you can put it away. It's the only way to learn. Lock yourself in your bedroom, and that's all you do for 6 to 12 hours a day. Anyway, she's sounding good. She can actually play a G chord and an A chord, and she can even belt out a 12-bar blues. You know, nothing fancy, but she's getting it done. Anyway, the guitar shop, by the way, a commentary on the economic recovery, the Barry Ho economic recovery. I called down to the guitar shop. I said, look, I got this old guitar. I just need a little work done on it, you know. Nothing big. And if you guys are really busy and you're overrun with shoppers, I don't want to come down there and bother you. Well, the guy, he's like, no, bring it down, man. Yeah, that'd be great. We're really not that busy. So I get down to the guitar shop. This is not Black Friday, but the following Saturday.
Yeah.
A day when, according to, if you read the press reports, there's just mob scenes of shoppers everywhere as the Barry Ho economic recovery burgeons and blossoms as we head through the fall towards Christmas. I walk into the guitar shop. And there's three or four strung-out looking long-haired guys. You know they work there. And there's like two other people wandering around the shop aimlessly looking at things. Nobody's buying anything. Anyway, this one of the long-haired, strung-out looking FM-type fellas, he was salivating when I handed him the guitar. He's all took it apart and started taking pieces off. And he's like, this is a nice guitar. Really loving this. The guy spent 45 minutes longer than he should have, probably. Fixing the guitar just because he's trying to drag himself through a pathetic shopping day on the Saturday after the first Friday after Thanksgiving. I don't like the term Black Friday, as a matter of fact. Have we discussed that? We don't like that term. You know, it was an inside term. It was an inside baseball term in the retailing world. I only heard about it because at one point in my life, I was sentenced to work retail for almost a year. Yeah, it was like a prison sentence. Anyway, that's how I heard the term Black Friday, because the store operated in the red all year. And then in the few weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas, we got into the black, and that Friday was the day it started. It was Black Friday. And now it's become common parlance. And in the secular world full of losers, Black Friday has come to mean, well, I don't know what it means. It means raining blows down upon people to try to get to cheap cell phones, I don't know. And you know what annoys me is Matt Drudge's tendency to put up every headline, shocking and otherwise, depicting and disparaging the maniacal American shopper as if that's all of us. And it's not all of us. It's just a few in the inner cities, Obama voters, you know, part of the dependent class, you know. They get a little bit of money off their private sector cheese once a year, and they just go ballistic. But that's not you and me. I mean, what did we do on Black Friday? I think we laid around the house, and we ate a lot of that leftover smoked turkey. Had a smoked turkey for the first time ever. Highly recommend that. If you I've had the deep fried. I've had the traditional roasted. I've had the prepackaged processed turkey loaf back when I was a bachelor. And this year, we had the smoked turkey. And, well, I just thumbs up was what I've got to say for smoked turkey. Mm-hmm. All right, now. Let's go to the justice file. I'm just droning on and on about mindless things. It's the holidays, though. Nobody's listening. That's what they say in radio. Although this isn't radio, technically. Anyway, the only reason I'm doing the show this week is because I promised one of my 6 loyal listeners, which is all I have left. Because I keep missing the show. I only have 6 left, and I promised him that I would do it. I said, come hell or high water, I'm doing the show this Sunday. And, I hope you're listening, Mike. This one's for you, buddy. All right. To the justice file. From NBC in San Diego, Stephen Martinez is a convicted felon. He was convicted of several counts of violent rape in 1998 after he drove his car over a woman, assaulted her, kidnapped her, and then raped her. While serving his sentence in 2001, Martinez was attacked by 2 other inmates and was stabbed in the neck. And the crowd went wild. Yay! Anyway, he was stabbed in the neck. The wound paralyzed him instantly. As an inmate, his caretakers say he remains, quote, an angry and repulsive person, unquote. Now, when you're a quadriplegic and your caretakers call you angry and repulsive, you've got to be a real jerk. I mean, you're a quadriplegic, so automatically you get the benefit of the doubt, you would think, right? So imagine what a rotten, mean, nasty person this Stephen Martinez is. Well, listen to this. Martinez applied last year to become the first inmate freed under a medical parole law that aims to reduce prison costs in California. Well, an appeals court in San Diego has ordered his release. Yes. Well, they say he's a quadriplegic. He probably can't hurt anyone, you know. Well, his parents have agreed to take care of him in their San Diego home. What a delightful household that's going to be. Have you ever seen that Bubble Boy? Seinfeld, remember the Bubble Boy? Mm-hmm. Who was such a terror and a nightmare? Mm-hmm. This is like that times 10 on steroids. This guy's a rapist. Two neighbors of the parents there in lovely San Diego said that they're not worried about their safety if the man were to return to their neighborhood. I'm not sure why that is, but they say they're not worried. Martinez has no motor power in his arms or legs and can only move his head to a minimal degree. He does not have any control over his bowel or bladder and will require 24-hour-a-day care for the rest of his life, which he was already getting in prison, and now they'll have to contract out. I don't know if the state's going to pay for it or his parents. What do you think? Yeah, it's going to be the state of California, of course. The appeals court decision authorizing his release stated, quote, "As a quadriplegic, the only way Martinez would be able to harm someone is by convicting another person to do his bidding," unquote. And of course, that's never happened before, right? No one's ever done anything like that in Southern California. That's just unheard of. San Diego's district attorney, the district attorney's office, opposes Martinez's parole, saying he is still a risk to the public despite his condition. No kidding. I agree with the district attorney there in San Diego, possibly one of the few sane people left in the government there in California. Isn't there a line in the Bible where Jesus healed a man who was, I'm not sure if he was a quadriplegic, but he was certainly at least a paraplegic. He was crippled. And after Jesus healed him, he said, "Go now and sin no more." So it didn't matter the state and the condition of this person. He was sinning. He was doing wickedness. God knows that even a quadriplegic is capable of bad behavior. And certainly a quadriplegic is capable of manipulating some other mindless heathen to do his dirty work for him. Anyway, and San Diego, they call it America's finest city. Yeah, but well, this takes it down a notch, the fact that this felonious mental case, dirtbag criminal, who should have been executed, he ran over a woman, then kidnapped her, then raped her. How is he even alive? Well, I wish we could find the two inmates who stabbed him in the neck, because I would at least thank them for their attempt to help the justice system work. At least there was an effort made by someone. All right. Now, let's go to some atheist news. We always love atheist news here at the Weekly Worldview. Not that we love atheists, although we don't have anything really like personally against atheists. We just kind of pity them. And here's one of the reasons. This is from campusforum.org. The Atheist Humanist Agnostic Club, that's the AHA Club, at Dartmouth College, has sent out a campus-wide email announcing a program that they were going to put on, promising a full-out romp against why one of the most beloved people of the century, Mother Teresa, is, as Christopher Hitchens put it, a lying, thieving Albanian dwarf, unquote. I didn't say that. Christopher Hitchens said that, and the AHA, Atheist Humanist Agnostic Club, quoted Hitchens. So it's an anti-Mother Teresa event. Now, I don't know that much about Mother Teresa personally, but it seems to me that she spent an awful lot of time trying to help desperately poor people in India, and that she could have done a lot of things that made her a lot more comfortable. And I don't think that she absconded with a lot of cash or bought expensive cars or wore expensive clothing. I think she slept in the filth there in India on many, many a night. Anyway, but I don't know her personally. I didn't follow her career every jot and tittle. But I think what she was doing was at least as good as what anyone at the Atheist Humanist Agnostic Club at Dartmouth College has ever done, and probably certainly as good as anything Christopher Hitchens has ever done. Well, the email from the AHA Club says the group plans to screen an anti-Mother Teresa movie, discuss Christopher Hitchens' book, which I don't want to read the title, about Mother Teresa, and question how the public has been conned into thinking that this woman was good. The email states that Mother Teresa, who's on her way to sainthood, was not afraid of the poor, but she was a friend of poverty. That's what they say, that she was basically like a poverty pimp, that she kept people in poverty so that she could have a job sleeping in their urine and feces over there in India, I guess. I'm not sure. Melanie Wilcox, executive editor of the conservative Dartmouth Review, spoke to Campus Reform in an interview, and she said, quote, "I'd like to know what they have done, if anything, to help the needy." Now, the president of the Atheist Humanist Agnostics, Adam Hann, he defended the event, but he admitted that he had intentionally used provocative language in the email to excite interest amongst the students. He's just a promoter. He's trying to get people to come to his anti-Mother Teresa event, and obviously a pretty smart young man using provocative language. Yeah, he says, "What I like to do is, when there are areas that people just get vitriol or angry, even for bringing it up, I like to go and have that discussion," said Hann. Yeah, just a shameless promoter. Yeah. Hann estimates approximately 5 to 10 people will participate in the well-publicized anti-Mother Teresa event. 5 to 10 people. And if 5 to 10 people show up, my guess is that at least 20 to 30 Catholics ought to show up and just ask these heathens, the Heathen Humanist Atheist Agnostic Club. What was it, AHA? Agnostic Heathen A? Well, I could put something in for that A. Well, anyway, the Atheist Humanist Heathen Club. We should have. I would think that the church could organize at least 5 or 10 people to show up and, I don't know, maybe try to stand up for Mother Teresa. Boys, go, go, go. I believe you can hit that note that high. It's the Weekly World View. I wonder if they even do that song live anymore. Imagine they've had to modulate down a little bit. I don't know if Getty can hit those notes anymore. Anyway, we do appreciate it, boys. Put those guitars away. It's time to get back to the news. We're going into the Bad Religion file. Weren't we just in the Bad Religion file? Oh, no, that was Dartmouth College. That would be the No Religion file. Dartmouth, by the way, founded as a Christian institution, has been completely hijacked and taken over by the atheists, the humanists, the heathens, and other things that start with A. I'll let you use your imagination. All right. Into the Bad Religion file. This is from the ChristianPost.com. There is a liberal Christian blog. First of all, the words liberal and Christian, they no longer go together. Maybe 200 years ago they went together, but they no longer do. But let's leave that aside. There, a liberal Christian blog, The Christian Left is the name of it, recently claimed that the Bible does not forbid abortion and that God even stated when life actually begins. Yes, isn't this shocking? You know what really makes me chuckle about these college-age students who put these type of things together? They think they're the first people to have stumbled across this information and that they're geniuses and that they're enlightened. And what they don't realize is that they're just another in a long line of succession of idiots and morons who just regurgitate this type of information. Let me just get to it. Here's what they say. The progressive group claims that a human is not truly formed or living until the first breath enters his lungs. And the child has to be able to breathe on his own in order to be considered a living person, a living being. And of course, they go to the Bible to back up what they say. They say, hey, look at Genesis 2:7. You know, these college-age blogosphere morons, they open up their Bible. They get to the second, and they're like, dude, we're only in the second chapter, and we already found something that totally takes out the whole Bible, man. Let's put it in a blog, dude. This is amazing. Can you believe that all these Christians have gotten away with this for so long? It's right here, man. Genesis 2, chapter 7, God breathed into his nostrils, that's Adam, the breath of life, and it was then that the man became a living being. Okay, now I don't remember it was then that the man became a living being. I'll have to open my Bible just to make sure. I thought the Bible just says, and God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. But I don't know what translation these stoners are reading. So anyway, but and there's another verse. Another verse they quote from the book of Job, the 33rd chapter, which states, quote, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. Wow, dude. Can you believe this? Man, let's put this in a blog, man. We might win a Pulitzer Prize or something. Wow. Well, I just assume there must be potheads to be. Who was I doing there? Was that Chong?
Spicoli.
No, that wasn't Spicoli. That was Chong. Tommy Chong, I do believe. Anyway, I just want to say, well, first of all, we're going to look in our Bible here real quick. And I may have to give the warning. And look in here, Genesis, okay, second chapter. Okay, warning. Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to silence anyone who would ever even dare consider the possibility of maybe quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Mr. Chong, Mr. Spicoli, they're running your blog. Let me just read Genesis 2:7 from the New King James Version. It reads, and the Lord God formed a man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. I thought so. It doesn't say it was then that man became a living. And they have that in quotation marks in the story as if it's right out of the Bible. What other versions do I have? I have the King James. And the Lord God formed man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Okay, so nowhere is there it was then that the man. Anyway, but that's all beside the point because there's all kinds of perverted and corrupt Bible translations. You know, this one bound in genuine hemp, you know, that you can get for your, you know, for your left-wing Christian blog. Anyway, to Mr. Spicoli and Mr. Chong, who write the Christian Left blog, these verses have been used for millennia. Okay, millennia. You're not the first geniuses to stumble across these verses. They've been used by millennia. Initially, by so-called religious Jewish leaders. Yes, back in the rabbinical days. Why did they use these verses to question when life begins? Because they wanted to facilitate the killing of unborn children. That's right, abortion is nothing new. The debate's been going on all the way back into the book of Genesis. And you geniuses are not the first to uncover the keys to discrediting the Bible. In fact, you're embarrassing. It's just frankly embarrassing. And, do I have anything more to say about that? I don't think so. I think that's about all there is to say about that. Now, I could go and pull up some verses that prove that life begins before birth. In fact, that God even knows you before your body is formed. I mean, I can pull those verses up. But I'm hoping someone will send this tape over to the... Nobody sends tape anymore, right? I'm sorry, I'm dating myself. Somebody can send a digital download of the podcast over to the folks at the Christian Left and have them look in their own Bible for the myriad of verses that indicate that life begins at conception and that God knows you personally before your physical body is even formed. Okay? Now, I'm not going to say that I'm some kind of genius for uncovering those verses because they're fairly common knowledge. I mean, even Christopher Hitchens probably knew that. Anyway. All right, let's see. Oh, here into the personhood file. This is pretty cool. This is from Reuters, Dateline London. While some scientists have previously suggested that fetuses yawn, I said, you know, like yawning, Others disagree, and they say it's nothing more than a developing baby opening and stretching his mouth. Well, researchers who have now studied 4D ultrasound scans of healthy fetuses say they think yawning is a developmental process which could potentially give doctors a new way to check on the health of a developing baby in the womb. Yeah, writing in the journal Plus One last week, British researchers said their study was able to clearly distinguish yawning from non-yawn mouth opening based on how long the mouth was open. So the babies, not only do they suck their toes, suck their thumbs, and they play with their toes, they yawn, all of that, they giggle. Anyway, unlike us, according to scientists, fetuses do not yawn contagiously, nor do they yawn because they are sleepy. Instead, the frequency of yawning in the womb may be linked to the maturing of the brain early in gestation. There. And I don't want to make some kind of big social, political, religious point. I think it's just cool. We got 4D ultrasounds, and we can now watch these little babies yawn in the womb. Well, I will make a political point. And there are people out there who will encourage ignorant young products of the public schools to kill those children and tell them that it's okay. All right. Now, more from the personhood file. The rate of abortions in the United States, according to a story in the LA Times, has fallen by 5%, the largest single-year decrease in a decade. I don't hear big cheers. I don't hear cheers and I don't hear clapping. No applause? No. Why not? Well, let's read on with the story. According to the CDC, that's the Centers for Disease Control. Now, only in the government would you have an agency called the Centers for anything. Because there can only be one center, right? There can only be one center. There can't be different centers. But in an ever-growing government, you want to make sure you have room to hire cousins, uncles, illegitimate nieces, all of that. So they have the Centers for Disease Control. Well, according to them, an important way to reduce abortions is to eliminate unwanted pregnancies. Oh, that's very utilitarian thinking. Well, we want to reduce abortions, so what's the way to do that? Let's eliminate unwanted pregnancies. Let's not teach people that sex is a sacred institution between one man and one woman in holy matrimony for life. Let's not teach people that. Let's figure out a way to eliminate unwanted pregnancies. And this is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thinking. Here's what they say, quote, providing women and men with the knowledge and resources necessary to make decisions about their sexual behavior and use of contraception can help them avoid unintended pregnancies. Yeah, I think that was printed on the apple on the tree of the knowledge. Yeah, I think that was printed on the apple that was dangling from the tree of knowledge. Something very similar to that. Forget about raising children who fear God, keep their virginity, and understand that sex outside of marriage is sinful, it's criminal, it's dangerous. Forget about that. Let's try to give people the knowledge they need, says the Centers for disease Control. Anyway, here's the big news. The abortion rate for 2009 was 15.1 abortions per 1,000 women of childbearing years. That's 227 abortions per 1,000 live births. Is that 22%? My math has never been good. Let me ask my extremely attractive. 200 out of 1,000 would be 20%, right? Yeah. 20 out of 100 would be 20%, right? 200 out of 1,000. Yes, 20%. Ladies and gentlemen, if you go back and you look at some of the most fierce and costliest battles in our nation's history from World War II and the Civil War, rarely will you find casualty rates at 20%. Yet that's daily life in America. The casualty rate is 20%. And the Centers for Disease Control and the LA Times is celebrating because the abortion rate has fallen by 5%.
Wait a minute. So they think abortion is not good?
They're very uncomfortable with abortion, but they do think it's good. But they are celebrating that it fell 5%, which is a little bit schizophrenic. You're right. You're right. Now, the If you read the article here in the LA Times, oh, here's the thing, my dear. They're utilitarian thinking. Uh-huh. They say that abortions have fallen, proving that we're giving people the knowledge they need to eliminate unwanted pregnancies. And that's to be celebrated. Uh-huh. Yeah. Not the fact that fewer children are dying. That's they're okay with that, I think, or at least that's what they say. But let me finish this out here. White women had the lowest abortion rate, about 8 per 1,000. African-American women, this is how the LA Times, I hate these people, these journalists, urinalists, I call them. Here's how they report it. They say white women, about 8 per 1,000. African-Americans, 4 times larger. So your average public school graduate who's digesting this news story, what are the chances they're going to sit down and do the math and say, well, 8 and 8, that's 32. 32 per 1,000? 32? Anyway, Latin American, not Latin American, Latinas, they say. The abortion rate amongst Latinas was 19 per 1,000 women of childbearing years. Okay. So I just want to point out that the Centers for Disease Control is reporting only on surgical abortions. And what they're ignoring is the dramatic and astonishing surge in chemical abortifacients being made available, being pushed like cocaine back in the 70s on your daughters and mine. Well, not mine, because mine aren't in the government schools. But if your kids are in the government schools, they're being taught about abortifacient pills and chemical abortions that account for how many abortions. We may never know how many abortions. Actually, we will know. On Judgment Day, as a matter of fact, I'm making a mental note right now to get those numbers on Judgment Day. Rounding third and heading for home. Nobody can understand what Mr. Plant is saying there, all except for heaven knows. That's the only thing you can understand in that song. In fact, if you go to the album jacket, I believe pictures at 11. No, heaven knows? Now and Zen. If you go to the album jacket and you look at the lyrics for heaven knows, it's just, it's like lorem ipsum, opsum du, asum de, you know that gibberish they put when you're trying to put a website together and they just need to fill in the text? That's what it says, and then it says, heaven knows what kind of fool am I. And then it's just lorem ipsum, dopsum de. Because nobody knows what he was saying. He doesn't know what he was saying. It just sounded cool, and it worked.
He's always like that.
All right. Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes my daughters will be exposed inadvertently to a Led Zeppelin song, and they'll say, what is he saying, Daddy? And I'll say, nobody knows. Nobody knows what he was. Nobody asked back then. Anyway. All right, we're running out of time. We've already rounded third from the Justice File, Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City, a Utah judge, Mike Norman, has given Tyler Allred, a 17-year-old, a 10-year deferred sentence for DUI manslaughter. The young 17-year-old was driving a pickup truck that crashed and killed a passenger, his best friend, in December of 2011. Now, the young man had measurable blood alcohol content but was under the legal limit, but because he's underage, it's considered a DUI manslaughter. Anyway, in deferring the sentence, the judge ordered Allred to a decade of church attendance. He sentenced him to church for 10 years, yeah. And it also requires him to finish high school and welding school. Okay. And the victim's family has agreed to the terms of the sentence, which I guess they think that people might infer that that makes everything okay, but, you know, the victim was not able to agree. And so I'm sorry, Tyler Allred, 17-year-old with your whole life in front of you and all that. I'm sure you're a wonderful, nice person. I'm sure you feel terrible about killing your best friend because you had a few drinks and got behind the wheel. But you should not be sentenced to do good in order to make an example for your neighbors. You should be executed, Tyler. I'm sorry to say it. Actually, I'm not sorry to say it. It's the facts, Tyler. You should be executed because that would teach your fellow high school-aged kids who have a tendency to want to drink and drive. That would be what teaches them not to do it. Put the fear of God into them, as a matter of fact. But the judge sentences him to do good. Go to church, finish high school, welding school. Okay, high school I would disagree with. The judge has sentenced him to do something immoral, and that's to go to public school. Anyways, that story is, that's a state of justice, ladies and gentlemen. Unbelievable. From the politics file, there's a website called it's called USA.gov. Welcome to USA.gov. It's a website maintained by the Department of Homeland Security. And when you click on there, if you're a new immigrant, illegal or otherwise, it says, depending on your immigration status, length of time in the United States, and income, you may be eligible for some federal benefit programs. And then it goes on from there. So many questions arise. Why is the Department of Homeland Security promoting welfare amongst immigrants, illegal and otherwise? And then there's a plethora of questions. Why is there welfare available to immigrants, illegal and otherwise? And that, of course, leads to my big question. Why is there welfare? Why are we giving money and things, stuff? Why are we giving money and stuff to people who have not earned it? What kind of example does that set? And how much longer can this go on before we all go broke and there's blood in the streets and a revolution and all that? I know. I thought that that could never happen in America. We could never be like Greece or the Europeans. But I don't know. The dependent class, I mean, when you try to take away their money and stuff, I think they're going to get pretty mad about it. And I think they spoke with a resounding voice in the most recent election that they will not stand for their government cheese to be threatened. And all that. Let's see here. More news from France. Good news from France, believe it or not. Thousands of people have rallied in Paris and across France last Saturday to protest a government bill that would extend marriage and adoption rights to homosexual couples. Did you get that, my dear? Thousands of people rallied against homosexual marriage in France. Yeah. Now there we get some applause. All right. The audience went wild. These demonstrators, their stated goal was to persuade French lawmakers to abandon plans to pass what's called the new Marriage and Adoption for All. That's the bill. Marriage and Adoption for All is being championed by France's communist, socialist, ruling socialist party. Communist, Darwinist, hedonistic. Can we think of any other derogatory adjectives? Adverbs. No, adjectives, yes. We homeschool around here, so I'm getting reacquainted with grammar. And so I forgot how difficult it was for me in fifth grade to tell the difference between an adjective and an adverb. And I had a mnemonic for it, but I lost it somewhere over the last 30 years. And I've been struggling with it. Those would be adjectives, derogatory adjectives. Heathen, scum, filth, Darwinist, atheistic, hedonistic, humanistic, French, socialist ruling party there. Organizers of the good guys, the people against the homos, said there was between 15 and 20,000 people at the protest at the French capital. So for all of you out there who think that we're outnumbered, well, we are outnumbered. But it's like God said to Isaiah, I have reserved for myself men who have not bowed their knee to Baal. And there's still a few people in France. There was about 100 people in favor of homosexual marriage. They met the rally at its starting point there in southern Paris. I'm not sure why the queers are marching. I'm not sure why they're marching against the Christians, because the queers have already won. I mean, in the temporal sense. I mean, the homo marriage and sodomy for all, what's it called, adoption for all, that law is going to pass. The queers have already won. They've already conquered France. So I'm not sure why the queers showed up. Maybe that's why only 100 of them showed up. The rest stayed at the bathhouse. All right. From the war file, this is from the Telegraph in London, a former Taliban fighter from Germany, a 27-year-old, he had traveled to Waziristan with his wife back in 2009 with the intention of freeing the area from the infidel occupiers after the German couple had converted to Islam. Well, he quit. Yeah, he had a hard time. He said, here's what he says. He says, he became disheartened. He says, quote, I was scared and I wanted to get out. Waziristan was not what I was looking for. Said this stupid 27-year-old German child, product of their government schools. Waziristan wasn't what I was looking for. Why did he dislike his new life with the Taliban? He said, well, their propensity to use drugs, their macho attitude toward women. He said one Taliban fighter went to the German widow of a dead comrade and told her that she would have to marry him. The proposal was made without any consultation with her, as if she was just an object, said this stupid German child. He also said that the Taliban was unhygienic and that they used a lot of drugs. The trip left him infected with hepatitis. And he said a lot of what the Taliban does, he says, quote, is incompatible with the teachings of the Holy Quran. Let's see. He's turned his back on radical Islam and lets his wife dress any way she wants. He took her out of the burqa. He says, I regret leaving Germany and I regret my crimes. Well, good attitude, young man. You know, let's have him visit with a Christian minister for a few days, give him a Bible, take him out back after a trial, of course, and shoot him in the head. Joining the Taliban, living to tell about it. How do we let that happen? It's dangerous, I tell you, to get in with those people. I mean, it's not quite as dangerous as getting in with the Atheist Humanist Agnostic Society. Because at least when you get in with the Taliban, I mean, you're confronted with the reality that they're just drug-addicted, drug-dealing thug criminals and rapists is really what the Taliban's all about. Criminal activity, the objectification, degradation, and utilization of women. That's really what the Taliban's about. And not unlike Hamas. Have you seen this video online? Go to thegatewaypundit.com and check out this video. One of the former Hamas leaders from another legendary video of the Jews, the Israelis, hitting that car with the Hamas leader. Have you seen that video? How awesome is that? Dropped a missile on a car, on a Mazda, for crying out loud. Not even a big car. The Hamas leader who was blown up that started the most recent unpleasantness. Well, one of the children of one of the Hamas leaders killed is in a video, and he says he wants to be martyred like his father, and he wants to launch missiles on Israel. And then they blew up a bus, and then Israel called for a truce, which is why I say that once again, Israel has been defeated. Now, speaking of defeat, now, my dear, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I had to do this story. My extremely attractive audio engineer hails from the island of Okinawa, a prefecture of the state of Japan. And I don't want you to take this wrong, my dear, but here's the story from the economics file. Last year, for the first time, sales of adult diapers in Japan exceeded those for babies. It's not a joke. So diapers for old people now exceed sales for diapers for babies in Japan. And she just nods and she's like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, but that's called the opposite.
She's not surprised. You're not surprised in any way. Anyway, over the last 12 years of economic stagnation, this is according to Business Week, Japan's Nikkei 225 index has, in dollar terms, posted a zero return over the past 12 years. Japan could be just in the middle stages of a terminal decline. This is an economic report from Business Week. What the gist of this article is that even though for the first time sales of adult diapers have exceeded the sales of baby diapers in Japan, The folks at Businessweek think now might be the time to invest in Japan because they might have hit bottom for so long and it might be so bad that surely things can only get better.
No.
That's no, she's not. She disagrees. She's Japanese. Anyway, that just struck me as a very sad and just a sad fact about the state of Japan and the world in general, for crying out loud. We got a lot of people getting old, but young people just aren't having babies anymore. And despite what Business Week says, I don't think now is the time to invest, ladies and gentlemen, in the secular West or Japan or anywhere else. I don't think things have gotten as bad as they can get, and they could get quite a bit worse. All right, now on to Fox News. The headline here, I changed the headline. This is from The Blaze. The headline read something about an insult from Brian Kilmeade, who's a host there at Fox. I changed the headline to Fox News hosts, femininity is confirmed. That's right. Last Friday, on Fox News' radio show, Kilmeade and Friends, which I'm completely unfamiliar with, host Brian Kilmeade made a tasteless joke. He said, we source all of our female staffers from Victoria's Secret. Here's what he said. He said, actually, we go into the Victoria's Secret catalog, and we flip the pages, and we say, hey, can any of these people talk? And hey, they all can. They all went to college. Well, it turns out, now people got mad at Mr. Kilmeade for implying that Fox News recruits their female talent from Victoria's Secret. Well, it turns out Kimberly Guilfoyle, who co-hosts Fox News' The Five show, posed for Victoria's Secret back in 1994, and she also posed for Macy's as an underwear model. After graduating, she quit the fashion industry and went on to work as a deputy district attorney in Los Angeles. Her first husband is a man, okay? That's another point in her favor. Former San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, she was married to him, if you can believe that. And then she married another guy, had a kid, and now she's divorced him. That's two men she married. So there's been an ongoing debate in the McBurney household about Kimberly Guilfoyle and when exactly did she undergo sex change operation. But it turns out, according to all the best information we have, Kimberly Guilfoyle is a female and always has been. Yes? Well, the best information we have.
Oh,
Victoria. I don't know about that. Anyway, that's it. I really don't have anything else. I think we're going to end on that note, insulting Kimberly Guilfoyle for no good reason.
There is a good reason.
Anyway, I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, at American Right to Life, at Personhood USA, and of course, as always, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.